In November 2010, the United Nations officially placed French gastronomy on the list of intangible cultural heritage. Of course, its residents and most visitors have long known that France is home to some of the finest food and wine in the world. G.Y. Drianski has written a memoir called Coquille, Calva, and Crème about some of the refined pleasures he's experienced in France's cafes and restaurants during his lifetime, sharing meals with the likes of Coco Chanel, Yves Saint Laurent, and Baron Philippe de Rothschild. He wrote the book, which is published by Pegasus, with the help of his wife, Joanne, and I'm pleased that it's brought Jerry Drianski to our show today. Welcome to At My Table.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Thank you very much.
You grew up in Queens?
That's right. Yes.
What were your plans when you were growing up or when you went to school?
I started out to be an academician, and I went to Princeton, I went to Harvard afterwards, graduate school, and I realized it was very boring. So I became a journalist, and I spent some time in Philadelphia, and I was running around behind Jimmy Hoffa, who used to call me country cousin. He was Polish origin, and we always wanted to come to Europe, and so we got on a freighter with the name of the Black Hawk, very sinister sounding thing. It was a nice ship, beautiful cabins, mahogany lined, 4 great meals a day, including Norwegian tea.
Well, that was in the old days. When are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the year 1963 A.D. Mm-hmm. We just got on.
But people went to Europe on ships.
Well, it was $175 a person. You couldn't beat that. Ten days on the sea, fed.
So you arrive at France, and how sophisticated were you about food?
Well, we arrived in France, and we had in our baggage a book called Europe on $5 a Day, which made one man very rich in those days. And we ate. So we ate on $5 a day at little restaurants where someone in the kitchen was cooking what they had found in the market, the best price that time of year. And we ate well. And then I became bombarded to the post of European director of Fairchild Publications.
Women's Wear Daily.
Women's Wear Daily was one of them, but that was the flagship. Mm-hmm. A misnomer. I didn't direct anything. The director was John Fairchild, who had taken what was known as the Bible of, he didn't like the word garments, the garment industry, and he turned it into the word, which was his word, on fashion and the best of fashion. And I was his ambassador.
Well, you were in France. You were in Paris, which at that time was seen as the center of all fashion.
Yes.
Before other places started challenging it.
Well, we could go on for a long time about what happened to fashion. What happened to food happened much in the same way when publicity and newness became the criterion rather than a commercial criterion, rather than the quality of what was being done.
So you're suggesting there's been a decline, both in the fashion industry and in the people who are responsible for French cuisine?
Well, I don't want to talk about the fashion industry because that would take a long time. Yeah. But if I could use a word that you might want to bleep.
No, don't use a word that I might want to bleep.
Well, there's a lot of BS.
Okay, that's okay.
There's a lot of BS.
Thank you.
In what is known as high dining in the world today. We lived through La Nouvelle Cuisine, which was new, which was a good thing. These people were young. They were bringing a modern way of eating for modern taste, and they were recreating a tradition which had been done before them. They were denying Escoffier at the same time they were using him better. And these changes go back to Catherine de Médicis when she brought in the Italian cooks. But what happened, and this I got as well from Christian Millau, who was I think the outstanding influential food critic.
Go Millau have a famous food guide like Michelin.
Yes, well Go is deceased now, but Millau nurtured these people, wrote about them, and he said to me, and it's in the book, You know, that if Molière, the great satirist, were around today, he'd have a great time about what's going on in the high dining. What happened is Nouvelle became the criterion.
Now, is that true everywhere or just in Paris? Because France, we tend to think of Paris as the center, but there's great food in every corner of France and very different food styles.
Well, what happened was this phenomenon of nouveau spread, the idea that there's a new kind of cooking being done, and it spread as a commercial phenomenon. Leonard, have you eaten live ants?
No, but I've eaten ants.
You have eaten ants?
Yeah, in Mexico.
With chocolate on it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a guy in Denmark who serves live ants in cold water. He is hailed as the greatest chef in the world.
You're talking about the restaurant Noma,
yes.
René Redzepi. Yeah.
Yes, René Redzepi, who's of Macedonian origin.
I've also eaten a cockroach, by the way, also cooked. So I'm a bit of an adventurous eater.
Well, this my point of view
it
in the book—
Didn't kill me.
No, my point of view in the book is this. There is this phenomenon of going to a restaurant, have your taste buds titillated, have a meal. And when it's done by the best people, it's very good. But I think that, you know, the French use, in French etiquette, the word manger in classic etiquette is almost a dirty word. You don't use the word eat. You take a little breakfast, you have lunch, you have dinner, you sup, you dine. You don't define the event as a bodily function. So my point in the book is this exists. It exists in what some critics call mouth brothels. It exists in what Alexander Coburn, who was a great gadfly of society, it exists in the experience of gastroporn. And people pay, what, $1,000 for lunch for two people? I think that eating, if I could use the word, is a kind of communion, if I'm not being pretentious, with the people who are there, with the personality of the place, where the stuff comes from. It's in the fiber of the society, it's a broader experience, deeper experience.
The New York Times food critic Pete Wells had an article in yesterday's paper about a trend in New York for restaurants to just present tasting menus, often with 15 to 20 or more courses. Is that something happening in France?
Oh, yeah, you could do
so
that.
So this sort of thing is happening everywhere. I'm not talking about just asking for a tasting menu.
Yes.
Some of these restaurants are only giving tasting
menus. Oh, yes, yes.
So, but you also mentioned that you did Europe on $5 a day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you can't travel on in any of the metro systems in Europe for $5 a day. So the world has changed. Are you suggesting that it's changed for the worse simply because the prices have gone up?
No, it's nothing to do with the prices. I think it's outlandish to spend $1,000 for lunch. But
if it's chump change, it's not a problem. It's only for people like you and me that that seems crazy.
Well, again, it's how you define that experience. You're spending $1,000 to attend a performance of a virtuoso who's going to titillate your taste buds. It may be a very interesting experience. It may be, even if you have the money, it might even be a very valuable experience. Has it marked your life? What I'm talking about is the phenomenon of having a meal in a broader sense of attaching yourself, communing with a culture.
Well, I also saw a lot of McDonald's when I was in Paris a couple of years ago.
That's right.
So, and I was told the French eat there. It's not just American tourists.
Oh,
so,
yes.
So French tastes have changed.
Well, you see, French tastes have indeed changed. I think the last time I read, there were more McDonald's per square foot in Paris than there are in New York. What's happened, and here's another aspect of what we're talking about, is that there are tremendous commercial pressures for industrial food. And people children, for example, on television are told to eat these nuggets with chocolate all over them. And so there's a culture now that's grown up eating industrial food. And if you go to a supermarket in France, you see what they put in their baskets. It's junk. But what we find in our book, thank goodness, if you go out there and you meet the people who are devoted to what they're doing, it still exists. It exists more than here. But, I mean, there's more Coca-Cola on the table of an average French restaurant now than there is wine.
My guest is G.Y. Drianski, who with Joanne Drianski has written Coquille, Calva, and Crème, Exploring France's Culinary Heritage, A Love Affair with Real French Food. What's Calva?
Calvados.
Oh, Calvados. Okay.
That's the French slangy word for Calvados.
Now, you also write in this book, this is a semi-memoir, you write about memorable experiences you have with some of the more famous people that you ran into, including Coco Chanel. Did you ever discuss the darker side of her past, or was it all about food and fashion?
No. Well, let me just say how food is connected to this, because I talk about soul food. And I think that every...
Which is not what we think of as soul food in New York.
Well, it
Southern,
has,
it's not like American soul
well,
food.
Well, soul food, from the point of view from the blacks, is food that they associate with their past, with their heritage, with their experience. And so there is... We started out with a soul food in this ethereal environment of the tout Paris and the fashion people, but they had their typical kind of way of eating, and the eating was tied into their lives. And then we went out to the countryside and found people who were more humble, if you want to call them that, who were doing that as well. But as far as Coco is concerned, you ask, did I know her dark side? Well, I used to watch her work sometime. I had the privilege of watching her work. And I saw her tear apart more than once the work of one of her workmen and bring them to tears. And a lot of bad things have been written about Coco. We knew her good side.
Well, she had an affair with a German officer during the occupation, which...
Yes, the latest book made her even more implicated in that Nazi past. But we knew her good side. I mean, she would, at the table... When you'd eat great classic food and start out with Stolichnaya and go on to Krug, she would take a necklace off her own neck and give it to one of the women at the table. Joanne got that. And I remember when this bit of theater, this big act of revolution of 1968 was going on, she said to me, "The Cadillac will be downstairs." She was the only woman I knew in those days who had a Cadillac in Paris. "The Cadillac will be downstairs. Bring your son and your wife, and we'll go to Switzerland."
We don't have a lot of time, but is it your sense that things are not as good today as they were in the past? Many people are concerned about how French wine is changing, at least in some cases, and becoming more Americanized, bigger wines in the California style.
That's exactly so. I knew Émile Peynaud, who was the kind of sorcerer of the new style of wine in the world today, based on something called malolactic fermentation. And it changes the way the wine is fermented to produce a wine that is juicy and alcoholic. I mean, you look at the alcohol degree on a bottle of Bordeaux nowadays, they're up to 14 degrees. Bordeaux is 12, 12 and a half. It accommodates the taste of people who grew up not really drinking wine. And Philippe de Rothschild once said to me, "If you really want to know good wine, you have to drink it all your life." And this is the new style. It has a market of new drinkers, and that's what people are drinking. It's this case in France. It's the case all over the world.
I assume you and your wife also cook at home.
Joanne cooks a lot.
French food?
Yes, we eat very simply, very simply. Good. She sends me out to different places where we get this fish or that chicken or whatever.
Well, you are now, you've been Condé Nast Traveler's Man in Europe since the magazine's inception.
Yes.
Still doing that?
I'm a contributing editor of the magazine now, but we spend most of our time writing fiction.
Uh-huh. Well... many people who write nonfiction spend a lot of their time writing fiction. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yes.
And the book is called Coquille, Calva, and Crème, exploring France's culinary heritage, a love affair with real French food, written by G.Y. Driansky with his wife Joanne Driansky, and one of the many Americans who have really become critics of French food. I gather that now when you see all these bakeries that say traditionnel, it's because of an American who told the French that they used to make bread better, and some of them are doing it again. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.